Schertel Talk, the podcast dedicated to everything about the sport that we all love, hydroplane racing. I am your host, David Newton, and it's time once again, so sit back, relax, and welcome to Schertel Talk. Hello, listeners. This is episode 115. And for today's episode, I had the chance to talk to one of the unsung heroes of the sport. In reality, there are so many different people, personalities that really make the sport happen, from drivers, crew members, owners, race venues, people volunteering at the events, people volunteering behind the scenes for the sport itself, each one officials, marketing, sponsorships. The list goes on and on and on. The thousands of people that it takes to pull this sport off and make it happen. And I talked to Dave Valancourt. Some of you may know the name, some of you may not, but Dave Valancourt for years has really been a drive behind a lot of the marketing and merchandising that the sport has had. And thanks to him, we've had some great toys and shirts and hats and different things and merchandise people like you and me, the fans, can purchase to represent our sport. This interview became a little bit more of a longer conversation. I really enjoyed talking with Dave, so we're going to put this into two parts. Dave had some exciting things to talk about with upcoming merchandise and items for the sport. But in this episode today, we talked a little bit more about his background with hydroplane racing, what got him interested, some of his favorite things, and his connections to his marketing and sponsored relations, as well as bringing visibility to the sport. Well, joining me today on the podcast, I have Dave Valancourt, a marketing, I'll say guru for the sport, but also sponsor relations and a few other things for H1 and the teams. Dave, how are you doing today?
Great. Thanks, David, for having me on. I appreciate it. And I always love to talk about boat racing and our passions. I guess our similar passions in life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you're at the right place to talk about this. I'm sure we could talk hours about hydroplanes. But I had a fan reach out and request you make the show, and because you've got some new toys we'll talk about later on for the sport. But before we get too deep into what's going on now, I always like to talk about the past, about our passions for hydroplane racing. What got you interested in hydroplane racing?
Well, I was kind of born into it since I lived right above the hydroplane pits on 46, right at the top. And ever since I was, 4 years old, my dad would drag me down and my uncle would drag me down to the races. And after about, I think I was like 7 or 8 years old, I was one of those kids that we stood on the side of the pin trading area and where the boats used to come in and all the people used to be able to go through the gates and everything. And, would just admire people that have pit passes. And then, one year, I think we were probably 8 or 9, somebody handed us a sticker that was a day pass. And we were like, wow, this is cool. So we got let in. It was a circle one. I think it was like 1977 or 76. So I was like 9 years old or something. Went into the pits and went, wow, this is incredible. The next day, we thought it was really cool and we were hanging out and everything. Somebody else gave us another passes and then one thing led to another. And then, we had a couple extra passes somehow, because we kept on asking people for them. And somehow, some adult came up to us and said, I'll give you $5 for that. And we looked at each other, a friend of ours, and we're like, yeah, we'll do that. I think we're the first ones selling pit passes back in the day.
A pit pass scalper.
Yeah, exactly. All right. At least I wanted to think I was the first one. So it was pretty funny. I think the Oberto kids were involved in that craziness as well. I think Jimmy was involved in that. I can't remember who all in the neighborhood was kids, but pre-Oberto sponsoring type thing. So, but that's kind of how I got involved. And then my dad worked at the post office with Bob Sr. and Bob Kearns, was another, and he was like an APBA or whatever it was, the URC, or one of the lead things at the one time. And he was the liaison to the military because he was in the military. And he said, well, if you're coming down, you know, I'll give you a pit pass, but you got to work. And so I ended up getting thrown in to work out on the water because I could swim. And I was thrown in with another guy named Bob onto his little runabout. And we went out basically diving to put the buoys in. And so I'd have to dive down and attach these things down. Well, and we were dragging the chain for looking for the buoys, you know, the markers that were underwater at the time and everything else. And Bob was a big beer drinker, and that's all he basically drank all day. So in the cooler was ice water. That was the water from the ice that melted, and beer. And I was like 13 or something like that. And I was like, do you have water or anything I could drink out in the hot sun? And he goes, no, but I got ice in the cooler. And so there's water. So yeah, I learned to, drink out of the beer cooler. Little splash of beer. It was kind of ugly, but that was kind of fun at the time. So,
wow.
The good old times of that. That's kind of how I got involved. And then basically how I got involved with the rest of the hydroplane stuff of making all the products. I don't think a lot of people know where all the merchandise comes from, the inflatables, the die cap, some of the crew shirts. You know, basically anything you can think of that's a hard good type thing has basically come out of my company. And I started a company in 1988. Actually, 1989 is when I started it after I graduated school. I was working over in Shanghai, China, and Hong Kong, and through a business program at University of Puget Sound, and went over there and learned about basically marketing and manufacturing. And came back and started my own company after a little thing called Tiananmen Square. Kind of lost my job opportunity there. And so I built a company of screen printing and graphics and all that kind of stuff here in Seattle. And went over back to China and talked to friends that I knew. And then Hong Kong, and started importing stuff for everybody from Microsoft to, I mean, you could name it, and we've built it. And lots of Shark Tank things and a lot of different things. So the hydroplane stuff is kind of like a secondary thing. And it's clearly a secondary thing, but it's my passion. So I'm always involved in those projects. And I've got a full team of engineers, manufacturing engineers, and project managers kind of take the lead on the hydroplane stuff because it's what I like doing. And everything else, I'll let everybody else do. So,
all right. Yeah,
that's how I got started.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, you're dipped your toes in pretty deep then after your rude awakening entering the sport with diving for the buoys.
Well, one question I always love to ask here is, what's your all-time favorite hydroplane and hydroplane driver?
Boy, those are two different boats and two different things. So my all-time favorite person in the sport is Steve David. And Steve is just the most humble guy with a lot of skill and a lot of ability to work with people. And his ability to remember people's names and facts about them is unbelievable. That is such a gift. I mean, he can talk about, he sees somebody once a year, maybe once every 3 or 4 years. And then he knows something about their mom or how is, she recovering. And I'm like, how does he remember this? I mean, and I constantly saw him do this the whole time. I'm like, unbelievable. So, I mean, his ability to be an ambassador for the sport and to be a good guy in general. He's successful in business, successful at racing, successful at everything he does. I admire him as, the all-around best person for driving. The boat, my passion, I love it, is the Pan Pack, the Winged Wonder. I mean, I bought a ride from the museum on it a few years ago, and circumstances like COVID stopped the my ride in Mahogany Merlot. Then the next year had something else. And then last year I had my son's college parents' days. And then finally almost got a chance. What was it? Last May, they took out the the Pan Pack and the Notre Dame and the Squire Shop. And I think it was the Tahoe. And I was next up to get a ride in the Pan Pack, all suited up and everything. Yeah. And it broke. So I guess I was a year ago or 2 years ago. I can't remember when that was, whatever day that I was like, I even got my, I even bought a ride for a friend of mine that was another childhood kid that lived there on the Notre Dame. And he got the ride on the Notre Dame and he was on cloud nine. So, but I'm still waiting for my Pan Pack ride.
Oh man. Haven't gotten a ride yet. Okay. Well, hopefully this year you can make plans, go to Mahogany Merlot and get in there.
Yeah. I did get a ride in the Bardol in 2001 or two out at Mahogany. I think they just had just the Lake Chelan thing. And, Mark Evans gave me a ride and let me tear for a little while. And you know, that's the ultimate, you know, thrill for a kid. And I described it as, you know, riding at 75 miles an hour over railroad tracks. That's what the whole ride felt like.
That's about right. That's about right. I actually got a ride in the Bardol a couple of years ago at Mahogany Merlot. But I was fortunate, though, because I was the last person to go Saturday evening. And then the first person that went Sunday, they broke a rod in the motor. I think that just on the way out to the course. So I got fortunate for that. But it's quite an experience, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's an incredible experience. And, you know, I shared it with my son as well. He got to drive ride in the Oberto. And so he got, because he helped, you know, he was doing, an internship type thing. And he was helping with we had the J kids. He was the first J kids of helping the drivers be their driver's assistant. So I think he was Jimmy Shane's driving assistant when he was, I want to say he was like 13 or 14. And when he turned 18, he got a ride in the Oberto. So
cool.
He raced J's as well. So for a while. And the larger 300 class. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think I remember him 1 year, the J stocks had wraps on, well, they have had wraps on it several years, but I think he was helping out Home Street. Maybe it was 2019 or right before COVID.
Yeah.
My son was with me in the pits and I was trying to give him a tour and your son helped him come back and like look around the J stock. So that was a fun experience. Yeah.
He was driving the Home Street with his Jay, and then my daughter was doing the Oberto. So
Okay. Nice. He was doing the Oberto. Yeah.
Her boat out here.
Okay. Well, when did they start racing?
Started with the museum, hydroplane building their first one. I think my daughter was 7. I mean, so Kip Brown's kid's daughter, they were all, you know, playing in the shop when they were young. At first, and then Katie and Andrew, I think, are the same age. Or no, I think Katie's Sophia's age. I think she's just finishing up high school. I think they were 9, and I think she drove for the first time when she was 9 or 10, and Andrew was 10 or 11 when he drove for the first time. So, and they thought it was pretty cool. At first, they weren't. They were like, you know, I don't know if I want to drive. And I go, okay, we spent like 5 months building the thing. Here's what you got to do. Just got to go take a lap, come back in. If you don't like it, we'll park it and we'll get rid of it.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, I'll take it. And then he went out and he came back in after one lap. And I looked at him and he goes, well, what do you think? He goes, I want to go back out. And I raced him out. And it was like, so he had fun doing that. So if anybody's out there that has kids that, you know, are in that age group between 8, you know, to start out at 9 years old to drive, it's a fantastic learning thing for them. So
yeah. I mean,
the good bonding thing is, you know, every weekend or every couple weekends, you're guaranteed a weekend with your kid all the way through teenage years and whatever. So it's a good family bonding where, you know, just the dad and or the mom and the kid. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Takes them off their iPads.
Right. Yeah. And there were or other worse things.
Right. Worse things. Yeah.
My son turns 9 tomorrow, but I don't think we've got the approval to be driving one of those, but he's got an RC boat. We're trying to get him into RC boat racing at least. So,
yeah. Well, the 9 year olds, they keep them kind of, they keep them restricted pretty well. And it is a little bit of a bumper boat thing, but getting hurt at that age is very rare. I mean, they're doing 30 some odd miles an hour.
Right.
They've got a lot of safety gear. I mean, it's Kevlar cut suits, Kevlar backpack, life jackets, the whole thing, even neck restraints and everything that else that. So, I mean, if you need, you know, we'll get them out there. So,
all right.
I mean, there's plenty of people that will be glad to take him out there, and he can use Sophia's or Andrew's J class.
Okay. All right.
he can test out the Alberto. It's still wrapped.
Well, that'd be cool. Awesome. Well, are they still racing now?
My daughter is. My son is. Actually, he's in Germany right now. He goes to college back in Boston and is doing a little program there. And so he's kind of out of it. My daughter likes the inboards. She really likes the inboards a little bit more than the outboards. It's a little bit of speed, but it's also, you've got the protective gear. It's not so visceral as far as air coming at you, and the stability of the boat's a little bit better. So she's running a 1.5 liter. She'll be racing that this summer. I don't know about the outboards. We're still up in the air about racing an outboard this summer, so we'll see how much time, but we're kind of dedicating the 1.5 liter that we've got. That Kip runs, you know, basically the deal with Kip was he gets the boat running. And, you know, I bought the boat, I write the check, he makes sure that it runs, and him and Marty rebuilt the engine for us. And I mean, put out a very consistent boat. So we're really happy with that. And we're having fun. So
it's fantastic. It's great to hear that she's racing still and keeping that going. Like you said, it's a great, great thing, bonding thing with your kids to race boats. Well, you mentioned earlier you started your company back in 1989, and you've been a longtime fan. But how did you get connected? Your products connected with the various racing teams? Like, when did that start for you?
I think it was, I want to say 1995 or 94, somewhere around there. Was helping, I think a company, it was Pizza Time. They sponsored the eight, I think the U8.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Boosters team. And, they happened to be a client before that for products that we screen printed in Seattle anyways. And, their person, Sherry, marketing person, said, "Hey, you want to do hydroplane stuff?" And I go, "Yeah." So then we started doing that. And then we did ceramic buttons and with 22 karat gold. And they were pretty cool. I think they're still a little bit on the collectible side. There's probably 6 or 7 different varieties of those, maybe even more. I don't even know. Made a bunch of those because the company that we sold the merchandise to went bankrupt on us. And they never paid us for the stuff. And so, I made up these buttons, and then I think Nate Brown, you know, signed the back of a bunch of them and said, "Hey, go sell these, you know, for $1,500, try to make your money back." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh, that's a great idea." So went and did that, and I had to thank Nate for doing that. That was a good guy.
Yeah.
So that's how I kind of got involved, and then did a bunch of, you know, talked to Larry Alberto when he was doing the Alberto team and doing the marketing, and went in and talked to him and his mom and the marketing person, Cindy Klapovich, I think is her last name. I can't remember. It's been a few years. went in there and pitched him on doing radio controlled boats and all kinds of things. And the first year we basically took stuff stock off of what we could find and did that, and then made a little die cast. And once one of the teams, you know, once Alberto saw it, everybody wanted the diecast. So then we went and tooled it up. And then we had a customer that sold to the Mariners. And so we made all the diecast for the Mariners. The first year we didn't do it. It was a different company out there.
Oh, okay.
and it was a different shape. It's kind of a long bullet more shape. Mm-hmm. We basically had the same molds as they did at the same time. And then we went and tooled our own more in the shape of a real hydroplane rather than the Hot Wheels and expanded Hot Wheels one.
Yeah.
So we did multiple Ichiro, I think Ken Griffey Jr. and a bunch of others.
It was Adrian Beltre. I remember that one.
Yeah. There was a Beltrain one.
Yeah.
It was, I think three or four. I can't remember. I mean, it's,
yeah.
We've probably done, I think, 30 some odd diecasts, 35. I mean, everything from Honey Bucket's got one. Very funny. There's quite a few. And those guys are all, you know, the one thing about working with the hydroplane people, they're all good people. You know, mm-hmm. they might be hotheads during the race because they're so passionate about what they do that, you know, this makes a difference to them. And, but after that, you know, when you're calmed down and everything, they're, you know, great people, you know, salt of the earth folks.
Oh, they really are. It really feels like a big extended family. Everyone really tries to watch out for each other's back and support each other wherever they can, it seems like.
Yeah, they do. And they, you know, they bring the business to their, to people that they know and they trust and looking out for their best interest too. So, mm-hmm. So that's kind of, the good thing about working with them is it is family and they know you try to make sure that they have something that they can use to raise funds and to, you know, get awareness to their customers. So I actually had a conversation with one of the team owners the other day and we just started talking. They're like, well, you know, I don't get much out of the hydroplane thing. I go, I think you do and you don't realize it. And so we started talking about it and he goes, yeah, you got a good point there. And it was, you know, he has a display hall that he puts on the side of the road somewhere. And he goes, yeah, you know, the one thing is about boat racing is that I've got name recognition around here. I can call and say, can I get an appointment? And he'll always get an appointment, but maybe not get the project, but he'll always get an appointment. So that was, and he was like, okay, yeah, I get it. So that was kind of the point I was making to him.
Yeah.
That's big to get into the door with those things for sure. Can't just come off the street with that. That was a big thing having the Mariners give out the little hydros. I remember kind of being blown away going to a game and getting one of those. So that was really cool.
There's 25,000 of each of those out there.
Wow. Are they gonna have any more, or that deal kind of ended?
It's not so much that it ended. What ends is you've got to have a sponsor willing to pay for that brand for that promotion. I don't know if Oberto's deal was at the time or something. They got one in and I don't remember the details of it, but that the other ones, the other giveaways were I think KVI, KOMO, those guys were sponsor of one of the diecast nights or something like that. So I didn't work on the sales side into the Mariners. I worked with our marketing, with a marketing company that sells into them.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. we're in the promotional world, we don't sell directly to the end user. So that's why we don't build our name out there. We're on the interior, what's called the supplier side. So we sell to people that resell products on the promotional side. So,
okay. Well, I know you made a lot of different diecasts and toys and inflatables over the years. What do you think has been your most popular one you've made so far? And what's your favorite you've made before this year?
Before this year, I'm going to have to say we did the plastic radio control boats. And I think I took a picture of the wall in our office. So if you walk into our office, we have a whole wall. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, yeah.
So
Budweiser, Oberto.
Yeah, there's everything from Graham Trucking, Formula, Radio Shack, All Access, U21, American Family, Budweiser, and the Oberto, Big Oberto. That's that 8th scale, I think, or 10th scale. I can't remember it.
Well, there was a 8th scale and there was a 12th scale, I believe, right?
Yeah. So it was the 8th scale, I believe. Yeah. It's the, what, 4 foot long one, 4.5 mm-hmm. feet. Yeah. So the last ones that we did, we did an Oberto with the Weed Whacker engine in it. And Budweiser one's pretty cool as well. So that's, I mean, I think those are my favorite because we spent so much time getting the price point where they could sell for like $75 with battery charger and radio control and still be operable by a kid. And, you know, it wasn't fast, but it wasn't slow, but it was cool looking. And it was a little bit of a challenge to do, but, you know, luckily Oberto stepped up and did enough of those to make it happen. So we usually have one team that it takes the run of the larger of the order to make the rest of them be able to jump on board the smaller teams. So, So I think that's probably my favorite, the model kit this year.
Sorry, Dave, I got to cut you off there. We'll talk more about this next episode. Yes, it's another classic cliffhanger. You can tune in next week, and Dave and I will talk more about those models that have been teased on social media. The 1/25th scale hydroplane kits for those current boats that will be out this summer. You'll hear more about when and where you can purchase them, what the pricing might look like, what will be included. As in next week for part two of my interview with Dave Valancourt, we'll talk more about that and some more of his merchandising and marketing career. Hopefully you enjoyed today's episode. And if you haven't done so, please like and subscribe. It really helps to broaden the podcast and get to more listeners and a bigger audience. We're on Facebook and Instagram, but we're also on the major podcast platforms. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and CastBox, and many others. If you haven't done so, please like and subscribe and leave a review. Also, check us out online. We have a website at richardtailtalk.com. On there, you'll see all the old podcast episodes, news, my contact information. You can also sign up for a subscription list where you get early access to all the episodes. But we also have a support tab where you can donate contributions to the podcast. This is a free podcast to all my listeners. So please, if you have time and you have a little extra, would love to get donation to help further this podcast to get more interviews and more content out to you. But until next week, I hope to see you at the races.